How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We have so much news to talk about today. It is one of the busier weeks of the year in pro wrestling and MMA, a big double pay-per-view weekend. A lot of double pay-per-view weekends, but this is two big pay-per-views. UFC had the return of George St. Pierre, one of their bigger shows of the entire year. WWE has their, supposedly, fifth biggest show of the year, Survivor Series. That's coming up this afternoon with a three-way for the title in the main event and a bunch of other matches as well. We are going to spend the next 2 hours previewing the Survivor Series, talking about how all of the matches play into the TLC pay-per-view, which is coming up in December, and, of course, the WrestleMania season, which is right around the corner as well, and try and have a little bit of breaking news on the show as best we can. I know, in breaking news, that WWE, John Cena, actually, has tweeted that he has a new look that he's going to debut tonight. God knows what that might mean, but probably involve a lot of primary colors. That's tonight on the pay-per-view. And we're gonna recap last night's UFC 154 pay-per-view. George St. Pierre returned, destroyed Carlos Condit, pretty much destroyed him. Most of the judges, 50-45, couple of 49-46s. Still, it was a one-sided pounding, with the exception of a high kick that had everybody on the edge of their seats in the third round. I'm going to talk about that tonight here on the program as well. Plus, if we have any extra time, talk about all of the latest news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. A lot of stories taking place, as always. After the show goes off the air, Survivor Series begins. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. We'll also be up later on tonight with a brand new radio show talking that pay-per-view. So a lot of stuff coming up today. A very, very busy weekend, as noted. And we are going to return in about 2 minutes to kick it all off. So, stand by the dial, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike Sempervivi, before we get going today, two questions, since we're going to be spending a lot of time talking everything else. First off, did you see Finding Bigfoot last week?
You know what? I did not.
Mike, I'm disappointed in you!
I know. I had to see it, and then I heard you and Carl Stern talking about it a little bit this week, and I really felt bad about it, and I knew you were going to ask me, but No, I have not had a chance to see it yet.
There's only 19 episodes left this season. You need to get on it.
Is this one of those things that I can't miss either? I'm going to have to watch the first one.
No,
get
of course
out of
not.
The way because I'll never be able to come in on it.
No.
If I pick it up in like three or four.
They're all exactly the same.
Oh.
They look at some blurry, out-of-focus footage. They conclude it must be a Bigfoot. They go investigate. They hear stuff in the woods. Bobo says funny things. And then the show concludes that there might be Bigfoot here.
Bobo?
Yeah. James Bobo Fay. He's the highlight of the show.
Bobo Fay.
Yeah.
They could use him on Survivor Series tonight, really.
They could. Now, before we get into Survivor Series and UFC 154, I want to make sure I give you a chance to tell us how the New Japan iPay-per-view was last week.
It was really, really good. I had a chance to run it down. I watched it again, too. I was a little rushed before I had a chance to the show last week. To watch it, but sitting back and watching it again, a really, really good show. It sets the table very well 2 months in advance leading into what is their WrestleMania, January 4th at the massive Tokyo Dome. But again, another really good show from top to bottom. The biggest high points to me were, and I think I talked about them a little bit last week, the middle of that card, the heart of the card was really the heart of the show with the junior heavyweight title match between Prince Devitt and Loki. where Devitt won the belt, which is leading into something very American, a three-way, actually, at the Tokyo Dome between Kota Ibushi, Prince Devitt, and Lowkey for the IWGP tag titles. The match between Shibata and Kazushi Sakuraba against Togi Makabe and Wataru Inoue, and the number one contenders match for the IWGP title, which saw Kaz Okada defeat Hirooki Goto, all were really the highlights of the show. And one thing I didn't have a chance to say last week is that the former Pride superstar and MMA Hall of Famer Kazushi Sakuraba will actually be wrestling his first singles match. At least I believe it'll be his first singles match by that point at the Tokyo Dome against Shinsuke Nakamura. So that's going to be very interesting. Nakamura is very good and can carry guys very well. Sakuraba is, you know, he's old. He wasn't exactly the smoothest pro wrestler in the world, even when he was a quote-unquote pro wrestler. So it'll be very interesting to see how this thing goes. But Nakamura should probably carry him through, but kind of a fun little match taking place on their WrestleMania.
All right, let's get into this here. I think we'll start with the Survivor Series. We'll do a preview of the show, and then we'll get into last night's UFC. Survivor Series is this afternoon. And the main event, of course, is a three-way for the WWE title. It is John Cena, CM Punk, and The Ryback for the belt. And keep in mind that originally, John Cena wasn't even supposed to defend the title here on this show. So one would suspect that he's walking out with the title. But there's a lot of different ways that they could go. They could put the title on John Cena and then do John Cena versus The Rock at Royal Rumble. Rock wins the title, and then you do The Rock versus CM Punk at WrestleMania. You could also keep the belt on Punk, which was the original plan. Punk versus Rock at Rumble, and then Rock versus Cena 2 for the title at Mania. Or you could do what was one of the ideas for the last pay-per-view, which is put the title on Ryback. Ryback loses the title in a TLC match, a multi-man match, where he doesn't get pinned. Punk gets the belt back, and you proceed as planned with Punk versus Rock at the Royal Rumble, although Punk's unbeaten streak would be broken. What would you do, Mike?
I still like the idea, I think, of Punk going through with it the entire time. Again, talked a little bit about it last week. You don't have to do The Rock and Cena at WrestleMania. You've already danced that dance once, and I don't know what reaction you'd be looking for out of that, or whether you're going to do it just to say you can do it again. I like the idea of actually doing Rock and Punk at WrestleMania, do Rock Cena at Survivor Series, and maybe you can get there by having Cena wanting the title match again, but losing here. I'm not sure how you'd pull it off. I would think you'd not want to beat Ryback in this. You'd want to beat Cena because you want Ryback's thing to keep going. And I think you're taking some of the value away from Punk, especially the way he keeps touting this title run that he's been having, and saying it's been 365 days or whatever it's been. I think you can go that direction, and it would make the most sense for everybody.
I think that they've already made a decision. I don't know what that is. I know it was made several days ago, and I know that the original idea was for Punk to retain, but I guess that brings us to the next question. Let's say for the sake of argument that Punk is going to retain the title, what would you do for a finish? Because there's obviously the traditional three-way finish. Would you go that direction of Ryback hits Cena with a move, Punk throws Ryback out, Punk steals the pin, or can you come up with something more creative?
I would try to do a creative spin off of that. You know, just something very flashy or something, but essentially that's how it would go because that would make the most sense. You know, Cena losing it doesn't matter, and even if, it was supposed to matter, he'd never sell it the next day. Like, it really meant anything anyway, so... You know, he doesn't need to win in this, and him losing and taking the pin to Ryback just makes Ryback look that much better. It keeps his streak going. It adds into Punk being the cowardly heel, and again, I don't know who you could, who's the kid in the tight vest who missed his chance at $1 million, the former referee who kind of looks like Tom Brady?
Oh, the Brad Maddox.
Brad Maddox. Brad Maddox. Yes.
Everyone gets so mad at me when I do that, but that's how CM Punk pronounces his name. Brad Maddox.
Well, even if it is Maddox, maybe he can get Maddox and his grandmother and the $2,000 check he spent on trying out and his cameraman, and maybe they can get involved somehow, too, and it gets Punk, you know, a cheap way to win. And, you know, cheap or not, it's not going to hurt CM Punk either. And, again, I think the only way you hurt Punk is by having him drop the title before he has a chance to get to The Rock, or even if it's, he's losing it to Cena again at WrestleMania, say. You know, the longer he goes with it, it's really the best-case situation.
All right, we've also got another title match, another world title match. It is The Big Show versus Sheamus. Of course, at the last pay-per-view, Sheamus and Big Show had a great match, actually, and kicked out of each other's finishers, and then, lo and behold, The Big Show punched Sheamus in the face and pinned him clean to win the title. You don't see that every day. Now they're having the rematch. I don't know if there was supposed to be a cash-in at the Survivor Series show, but I do know that originally Dolph Ziggler was going to do something, which is why he promised he was going to, and then they changed their minds, which was why then he didn't. So I don't know if he was going to cash in at the last pay-per-view and they decided to hold it off and he's going to cash in tonight, or if they just dropped that plan altogether. But he is lurking in the shadows, this Dolph Ziggler. What do you expect to happen in the Big Show Sheamus match tonight?
I could see getting Ziggler, you know, involved in this, but that would probably mean Show and Sheamus would go on last, and I think that would be a, you know, a big glowing light. I mean, that's what I would figure, at least, unless they're going to open the Survivor Series with the Elimination Tag match, which I
can see him doing that.
Well, I guess they could. I mean, and judging from the lineup, there's not a whole lot here either, so I don't know. I'm probably going to have to think about this a little bit as we go to break, because I wouldn't take the title off the Show. I don't see a reason to really hot potato it around, but I'm trying to think of what could possibly be a way out for him that makes everybody look good.
All right, well, we'll go to a break. We'll give you a chance to think about that, and when we come back, we'll discuss that and all of the other matches for Survivor Series. Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. If none of these work for you, you can always go to the App Store for whatever mobile device you're using and buy, or I know in a lot of different platforms it's actually free, the TuneIn Radio app. TuneIn Radio. And all you do is search Sports Byline. The Sports Byline Radio Network is available for free on the TuneIn Radio app. And you can listen to this program and all of the other great programming available on Sports Byline USA. So that's the TuneIn Radio app. I know they've got it for the iPhone because I have it on my iPhone. I know they have it for the Android as well. I think it's actually free on the Android. I'm not positive. Don't take my word for it. But search the App Store. If it is an app you must pay for, I think it's like $4. You pay for it once and never again. And if you're a big fan of this show or Sports Byline programming, then $4 well spent. We are here talking about the Survivor Series pay-per-view. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking about UFC 154 last night. But the preview here for the show that takes place immediately after this program goes off the air from the Bankers Life Fieldhouse, Indianapolis. We've been talking about the main events of the show, Big Show and Sheamus, Punk, Cena, and Ryback. And Mike, you were coming up with a scenario for Big Show and Sheamus that could potentially involve Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, and it's, I guess it would depend on if Randy Orton's going to turn heel at some point, and you want to, I would want to build on that and make something happen down the line. I can see Dolph Ziggler, especially if they open with the Survivor Series elimination, or they have it, maybe it's the second match on the show, him coming out after a war with Big Show and Sheamus, either Show gets the, you know, gets the win, but he's so dazed that, that Dolph comes in there. But I wouldn't think that would make much sense. I think you would get far more heat on it if Sheamus wins it, you know, comes out victorious in a hard-fought battle, survives a couple of punches or whatever it's going to be, and Ziggler gets the win that way. And then that way you can have Sheamus and Ziggler together for a little while, which would I, you know, I would figure down the line would be Sheamus winning, and then if the plan stays together to turn Randy Orton heel, you know, Sheamus and Orton together, I think, would be, you know, probably one of the ways they could go where it would make the most sense.
I think you could also do a deal where the Big Show, you just do Big Show and Sheamus. You don't have a cash-in tonight. And at the TLC pay-per-view, there's a lot of gimmick matches. So they could be involved in, for example, a table match. And maybe Big Show beats somebody in a tables match. But then, lo and behold, after the match, Ziggler comes out and gives him the big heave-ho, and he goes through a table, which, of course, they can play up as debilitating. And then they restart the match there, and Ziggler gets the win. So at least you've got a way to lay out and debilitate the Big Show before you do the cash-in on him. But I guess we'll see. They've, in the past, a lot of times, not every time, but a lot of times the guy cashes in that briefcase at a time when no one's expecting it. And of late, Ziggler keeps promising he's going to cash in, which is taking away the surprise aspect of it. He really hasn't done that on this show because he's involved in another match and they're busy working on that, and they're busy doing the whole deal with AJ and John Cena and Vicky Guerrero. So this might actually be a good show where him cashing in would catch people by surprise. So we'll see what happens. I think that, you know, my thought originally, as I've mentioned, is that they put over so much that the Big Show was not going to have a 47-second reign or whatever it was. They pushed this over and over and over and over again on TV. At the same time, they were pushing that Dolph Ziggler was going to cash in at the Hell in the Cell show. So, my conclusion was that one of the ideas they had was that Big Show was going to win the title after bragging that he wouldn't hold it for 47 seconds this time, and Dolph would immediately cash in and beat him for the belt in like 42 seconds. I think that that would have played into every storyline that they were pushing on television, but they didn't do that. So now that they gave up on that idea, maybe there's no hurry to put the belt on Ziggler. And really, I think Big Show is doing fine as champion, so I wouldn't take it off of him, but that's just me. We do have the multi-man Survivor Series match. One of probably two. I believe there's going to be a second one added. Likely eight-man elimination. Maybe it'll just be an eight-man tag with Ray and Sin Cara, the primetime players. Those guys. We'll see what happens, however, because the original match, Miz, Kofi Kingston, Kane and Daniel Bryan, and Randy Orton against Ziggler, Damian Sandow and Cody Rhodes, Wade Barrett, and Alberto Del Rio, in a 10-man Survivor Series elimination match, which actually, if you put the original members back into this match, this was going to be the main event on the show. Obviously, that changed. This now may be the opener, in fact. But the big question is, what do they do with Damian Sandow and Cody Rhodes? Cody is hurt. They could replace Cody. They could take Sandow out of the match and put the primetime players in. A lot of different ways they could go. What happened was the Cody and Sandow were wrestling Daniel Bryan and Kane on WWE main event, and Cody got hurt. Did you see this match, Mike?
I didn't see the entire match, but I saw the backdrop and the way that Cody landed.
That was not good.
Not at all. Not even sure what he was. I'm not exactly sure, you know, with physics and whatnot, what happened there where he just went up. I don't know. He just looked like he, you know, darted himself straight down onto his shoulder. And, yeah, that was nasty. Not only tore his shoulder up, but knocked himself out, literally.
I think he said he tore his trapezius. He tore one of his shoulder muscles. I can't remember. A concussion. But he suffered a lot of injuries. I think it's impossible that he would work today. Although it is a 10-man elimination, he could just be cradled immediately. But I think that they can reshow that footage 1,000 times and get over the injury, because you could tell he was hurt by the way he landed. From watching it, I watched a couple times, and I think what happened was Kane, I don't actually really blame either guy for what happened. It was kind of just like a goofy accident. Kane launched him just fine. Cody was going up just fine. And I don't want to blame Cody, but I think if it were anyone's fault what happened, I think as Cody was going up, he decided that he was also going to push off Kane to go even higher. And unfortunately, Kane had not pushed his legs hard enough. And so he landed, he basically under-rotated dramatically. So that's what happened there, and it was horrible. And, I mean, if you watch the match, Daniel Bryan, he did like one spot, Cody took one bump, and then everyone was kind of telling Daniel Bryan, dude's hurt. So they quickly had him tag out, he never tagged back in. And Cody on Twitter just pretty much said they saved my career by doing that. So apparently it's a pretty, very serious concussion. And if he would have continued working on it, who knows what state he might be in right now. It could have been the end of his career, he's thinking.
Yeah, nasty there. And then, you know, obviously leaves the open hole or the possibility of two open holes. I don't think I put the primetime players in there, even though they've, you know, this whole match has been knocked down a peg with Ryback and Punk not being in it. I don't, you know, the primetime players could be much better off using in a second one of these matches. And I don't know if anybody is like ready to go, if they could pull off a surprise with like a Mark Henry or somebody like that. And I don't know who you're going to throw in there, but the primetime players probably wouldn't be my choices.
Why is that?
I just say,
if you had the choice of the team of Damian Sandow and Mark Henry, which actually Mark Henry should be back any time, so you could throw Mark Henry in there, but you'd prefer Mark Henry and Damian Sandow over the primetime players?
At least that would get a pop from the crowd. And, you know, Team Hell No, they're obviously going to have to work against somebody if they decide, you know, Rhodes is going to be out for a little while, which I would assume he would be. You never know. And Damian Sandow, I mean, they are going to need somebody to work with, so that would make sense. Maybe pulls them away from Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe just the fascination of seeing Damian Sandow standing there next to Mark Henry, that would be really good. And probably that would at least be more fun than the possibility of it being El Local, Ricardo Rodriguez, not because I don't want to see Rodriguez. It's just that would just show absolutely, you know, zero thought whatsoever.
I had someone, I forget what they tweeted me exactly, but it was something along the lines of, big win for Damian Sandow over Martin Campman last night. They do both have beards.
They do, I guess. Yeah, I never thought about that. Can we call him Big Rig Damian Sandow?
Yeah, sure. Big Rig, huh? All right, let's do a quick preview or a quick prediction. If you had to predict which team is winning the Survivor Series elimination match, and is it going to be a series of men or is it going to be sole survivors?
If it's going to be a sole survivor, I want the sole survivor to be Wade Barrett. Regardless of what happens, I think the heel team should come out on top in this. And, you know, Dolph loses all the time anyway, so no big deal there. So I actually hope, even though it doesn't really matter for Damian Sandow, I hope it's Sandow and Barrett, but at the very least, I hope it's Wade Barrett.
All right, let me ask you this question. We don't got a lot of time, so a quick answer here. We can talk more after the break. Originally, this was Team Foley versus Team Punk, and then they changed everything around. Now, a lot of talk that CM Punk and Foley being involved, not to mention the return of Jerry Lawler Monday, which led to a promo battle between Mick Foley and CM Punk. There's a lot of talk that this is leading to a match in the New York market next month at the TLC pay-per-view of CM Punk versus Mick Foley. This horrifies a lot of people. Now, when we come back from the break, Mike, I'm going to get your thoughts on that match, and we're going to talk about the possibility of those two squaring off. So stay tuned, everybody. I'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Want to thank and welcome KRAK 910 AM, Hesperia, California, serving Riverside and the Inland Empire. Big thanks to Harvey Wells of KRAK 910 AM, newest affiliate for this program on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We have affiliates all over the country, and you can always listen to the show every Sunday afternoon on those affiliates. And if you cannot, if all of the different options we've given you, WrestlingObserver.com, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, KRAK 910 AM, for example, if your affiliate happens to not be carrying the show on a particular afternoon, we always have the TuneIn Radio app available. You can check out TuneIn Radio on the iPhone, the Android. It's in the App Store. I believe in a lot of places it's free. Some places it's $3 or $4, one-time fee. But the TuneIn Radio app carries the Sports Byline Radio Network, so you can always listen every Sunday afternoon on the TuneIn Radio app. And if those aren't working, of course, the front page of WrestlingObserver.com as well. That is our home, WrestlingObserver.com, daily news updates, tons of radio shows. If you love this radio show and you only get to hear it once per week, you are missing out. We do radio shows every single day. I went to bed last night right after doing a radio show, and then I woke up, and here I am, doing another radio show. Got another one coming up tonight with Dave Meltzer talking the Survivor Series. Got another one Monday night talking Raw. We have shows every single day. Check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. We have free shows available. If you scroll down the right-hand side of the page, you can check out our latest three free radio shows. And if you sign up, $10.99 a month, you not only get access to every radio show that we produce every single week, but you get access to every radio show we've ever produced. Every show we've ever done is available in the archives right now. We have thousands and thousands of radio shows, thousands and thousands of hours of audio available for you right now. It's only $10.99 a month. Check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. If you love pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you will not regret a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. And don't forget, the holidays are coming. Now, we're talking the Survivor Series pay-per-view, which takes place moments after this show goes off the air. By the way, Dave Meltzer doing live running play-by-play on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. I'm heading to my buddy Craig's, which means I'll be a little bit delayed, but delayed tweeting at Brian Alvarez on Twitter for the show tonight. Of course, Mike Sempervivi up on Twitter as well, at Sempervivi. He managed to get that early on. We're here talking about the show, and we've been running down the matches. And before the break, we're talking about the possibility at TLC of CM Punk versus Mick Foley. What do you think about this match, Mike?
I'd be okay with it because I think it could be fun. But I'm saying this after watching Mick Foley, and I love Mick Foley and everything, but he just, the way he is moving, as big as he is, as, you know, out of obvious ring shape as he is, even though they could do a whole lot with very little, and it would be more of them with the crowd and everything else, if Mick Foley was in better shape, I'd be for it, even though it wouldn't be good, and it would, the risks would still be high, because an in-shape Mick Foley is still not a spry Mick Foley. But if he was at least a little bit more in shape, I would be okay with it. But he's not going to get in shape, I don't think, by that point for TLC. And even though they can do a whole bunch with a very little bit, I would still rather not see it happen.
I think the important thing to remember is that it is the TLC pay-per-view, which means there's a TLC match, there's a tables match, and perhaps a ladders match, and perhaps a chairs match. Maybe all of them. I forget exactly what how they mix it up every year. But point is, if you could convince the fans that Mick Foley presents a threat to CM Punk, and I don't know how you do that. I don't know if it would involve an angle on a Raw where he just destroys CM Punk, and I don't know if you can bloody him up. But hey, the election's over. No, they're not going to have blood. But whatever, however you do it, I think that if you convince fans that Foley is a threat, then you can do a tables match at TLC. And really, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in a tables match. A lot of teasing putting a dude through a table. And really, at the end of the day, all Mick Foley has to do is take one bump through a table. And it doesn't even have to be like off the top rope through a table to the floor. You can have a table set up in the corner, reverse a whip, and bam, he goes through the table. Obviously, it'd be a little more exciting than how I just described it. But you could do a match where Mick Foley can largely just beat the hell out of CM Punk for 15 minutes. And then you do a couple of switcheroo spots, and he goes through a table, and that is the end of the match. So that is possible. I don't know if they really want a headline. The problem with my idea is you're right, everything you said about Mick Foley. And I don't know if they may say right now, hey, let's just do a tables match. But when push comes to shove, if this is going to be for the title, and they're sitting there, and it's like, man, this is going to be a championship match. Mick Foley, CM Punk, they're both involved. It's in the New York market. You know what, guys? Just do a TLC for us. And the next thing you know, Foley's climbing a ladder and falling off. That wouldn't be good. And I can see them. I can see that happening. So I think it's a bad idea to try to put the match together. But with all that said, watching television, I think that's the match they're going to put together.
Yeah, it's too bad, too, because they could use this as an opportunity to give Mick Foley a chance to give rub to somebody else, because you could have, you know, Paulie and Foley with their backstory and TLC. They could be, I don't know, you could tie that in somehow with an opponent for CM Punk, you know, not a Ryback or anything like that, but somebody who he could be in there with, and to create a threat and to give a little bit, again, just, you know, get a little bit off of Mick Foley instead of having it be Mick Foley. And again, yes, they could do it with smoke and mirrors, and it wouldn't be, again, it wouldn't hurt my feelings altogether too much if that's the case, because Mick Foley's going to do what he's going to do. But with that said, I just would feel a lot better about it if, you know, he had moved in a way at some point, getting even just in and out of the ring for interviews a little bit better.
Now, I've talked about a million people about this, but it's your turn now, Mike. Speaking of Mick Foley and CM Punk, what are your thoughts about the return of Jerry Lawler and the subsequent angle on Raw Monday night?
Well,
funny you should ask, Brian.
That's just one of those things where if you have watched professional wrestling for a long time, and you no one outside of the average fan is not going to understand this. The average person on the street definitely is not going to understand this. But when you say to someone that Jerry Lawler's mother had just died, and he's going to use that information for everyone's entertainment to make someone hate this person that's making fun of him about the fact that his real-life mother died. And no one would be able to comprehend or understand that unless you're in the wrestling business. But we've seen the turn with, you know, wrestling not being wrestling like it used to be, and it's sports entertainment now, where those types of things aren't that accepted. Here was another great example of it. With Jerry Lawler coming back, they do a very pro-wrestling thing, and something that Jerry Lawler was obviously all for, and not surprisingly either now. And they make fun of his heart attack, and they Paul Heyman mocks it and falls to the ground. And frankly, Paul Heyman shouldn't do that, because as bright red as his face is with those glassed over eyes, you know, it actually looked a little bit too natural. Paul, don't do that. But it was in bad taste. And I think what was even, it's in bad taste as far as what today's standards of wrestling are. It is. What I thought was worse than that was showing all of the footage, you know, with them shocking him back. And I know there's one part of that that goes, wow, how amazing, you know, medicine is, and the fact that you see how close we were to losing Jerry Lawler forever, and it's, you know, part of it's amazing, but I think with their history, like using Lex Luger's 911 call about Elizabeth on Confidential, I think when they have a history of that, it does nothing to make me think it wasn't very exploitative showing all of that stuff. And Lawler coming out, I thought was awesome. And I don't even have much of a problem really with the to me, and I hate to say it, that's just wrestling. That's just a wrestling thing to do, and I can't complain about them wanting to go. You know, if I want a lot of things in wrestling in some ways to go back the way it used to be, even though you can't put the genie back in the bottle. But with some of those things, there's something like this that has, you know, have they gone on too far, and are we too past using stuff like this? And again, it's a 50-50 sort of thing. I didn't see all that big of a problem with it. My problem was more the footage that they aired before that.
You know, I haven't mentioned this yet, but the people from Nightline interviewed me about R.J. Brewer of Lucha Libre USA, and he does a gimmick where he's the son of Jan Brewer of Arizona, and his character, essentially, is a fella who is trying to get all of the Mexican wrestlers deported. And so they interviewed me about this, and essentially, I explain that to a normal person, this sounds appalling. My God, this guy is trying to... He's doing these interviews saying that he wants to get all of these Mexican wrestlers deported. And I was like, in the grand scheme of things in the wrestling business, this is nothing. I mean, you should see the things that these people do. And this, by the way, this was before they did the thing with Jerry Lawler on Monday. But I brought up the Eddie Guerrero deal where, you know, Eddie Guerrero died. He actually died. And Randy Orton on television a couple of weeks later announced that Eddie Guerrero was in hell. This seems like a pretty serious sort of deal. But if you've been watching wrestling for a long time, you become numb to all of this stuff. And I remember sitting there and I'm explaining all of this and I'm just thinking, you know, I'm going to come off like, I don't know what I'm going to come off like on this program, trying to explain to people that it's really no big deal that this guy's trying to get all these Mexican wrestlers deported. But like, the standards of a normal person and the standards of wrestling fans are very, very different. And it was interesting that the Jerry Lawler thing, I mean, to a lot of fans, this was too much for them. And they've seen it all. And I kind of fall into your camp of the angle itself. It was a wrestling angle. I've seen it a million times. I've seen a lot worse. Jerry Lawler is, in fact, alive and well. And Jerry Lawler was the king of Memphis, and it's not the first time he's been involved in this. And in his brain, all he can think about is, how can I weave this real life into a storyline? And I'm sure that he was probably all right with the entire situation. In fact, I know they cleared it with everybody in the ring, and everybody was fine with the situation. But to your... you know, to your average wrestling fan, I mean, this was not their thing. And me personally, I didn't like the footage at all. I thought it was, I thought the footage was just too much. You know, it's one thing if you're doing like the Jerry Lawler DVD, the story of his life, and you've got some footage in there talking about what really happened. But putting it on the wrestling show to lead to this angle was just like, we are exploiting literally your death, because he was dead for 10 minutes. We're exploiting your death here on this program, and we don't care. So I didn't like that part of it, but the angle itself to me was just like, it was a wrestling angle involving good guys and bad guys, and we've seen it a million times, and the individual involved in it is alive and well, and I'm sure, I have this feeling, I could be wrong, I think at the end of the day, Jerry Lawler is going to get some form of revenge on CM Punk. Probably not in the ring. But it'll get some sort of revenge. We're going to head to a break. When we come back, we'll get more from Mike on that topic and also talk about the women's match at Survivor Series. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, as we are every Sunday. 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. 2 hours of fun times, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're talking the Survivor Series pay-per-view, which is about to take place in an hour, 1 hour from now on pay-per-view. Survivor Series, Dave Meltzer doing live running play-by-play on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com. You can head up there and follow along. And we're still running down the card, believe it or not. Eve and Caitlin for the women's title. Mike, it is time for your prediction.
My prediction is I'm going to be upset that there's no Layla in this match. But there's... Caitlin, for those who have not seen her, is not good. And they are at a They have a shallow pool of women to work with right now, but Eve is actually very good. She's not great or anything like that, but she's very good and very comfortable in her role, and her retaining the title tonight would make the most sense, and probably it's going to be in pretty short fashion, too.
Yeah. I know they did a poll on WWE.com. Who do you think is going to win this match, they asked, and everyone said Caitlyn. And I was like, really, y'all think Caitlyn's going to win this match? But they did. I don't know what they're going to do, because, believe it or not, there's, I don't want to say concern, that's way too strong a word. But WWE does recognize, we got no women. And they're all wrestling each other over and over again. So, I would not be surprised if someone new debuted tonight. That's pure speculation, I have not heard anything. But they need to get some new women up on the roster. Otherwise, we're going to see Eve, Caitlyn, and Layla wrestling each other until the end of time. And throw Natalya in there, since Beth is gone and a number of women have disappeared. Edge, by the way, noted that girls aren't getting a chance. That's why so many are leaving. And seeing as how he's dating Beth, well, pretty much gives you an idea as to why she left. All right, we are going to head to a break when we come back. Final preview of Survivor Series, and then we're going to get into UFC 154 last night, the return of GSP. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours, the next hour, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, starting at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can use the TuneIn Radio app as well. iPhones, Android, search Sports Byline USA, and you can listen to not only the show live every Sunday afternoon, but the archives are on there as well. You can also check out the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. We spent the first hour talking Survivor Series. A lot of WWE news. In this hour, we're going to be talking UFC 154, the return of George St. Pierre. Wanted to throw out a couple of quick preview notes here. We actually did not finish the Survivor Series preview in a full hour, believe it or not. Don't even ask me how that's possible. But Mike, Antonio Cesaro defending the U.S. title against R-Truth. They're not going to put the U.S. title on R-Truth, I presume.
No, and the build-up to this has been awful. I had a chance to see SmackDown, not much better. Antonio Cesaro with the win. Hopefully they hook him up with somebody, you know, that's worth watching him against.
Yeah, I expect Cesaro to retain that title. And we've also got Heath Slater and Jinder Mahal against Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel in the pre-show match. Sad to report that Drew McIntyre's mother passed away. That is why he's been off TV, and it's been 2MB for a while. I suppose it's possible he could return today. I only know it's two members of the team, and I presume that Drew wasn't going to be there. I know he stayed around in Scotland for a while after the tour overseas to be with his family. So we'll see what happens tonight. But just a pre-show match. I believe it's airing on YouTube and perhaps the Barker channel as well. So you can check that out. Really probably doesn't matter who takes that match. But it should be all right. So that is the YouTube match and the final match for the main card of Survivor Series. And as noted, probably adding a bonus 8-man or a 10-man tag, perhaps Survivor Series style rules as well to the show. So we're going to head to a break. When we come back, the return of George St. Pierre. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also follow us. Tune in radio app on your smartphone. Search Sports Byline USA. You can listen to this show live every Sunday afternoon, or archives available on the Tune In radio app as well. Sports Byline USA is the... Or you can search Wrestling Observer Live as well. And a lot of stuff. By the way, we also have free shows available on iTunes. Search for Wrestling Observer, Wrestling Observer Live, Brian and Vinny Show, Figure Four Daily, all up there on iTunes, so you can try some of those out as well if you want a preview of our members-only area at WrestlingObserver.com. We're here talking Survivor Series, which is taking place moments after the show goes off the air. Live running play-by-play with Dave at WrestlingObserver.com. And last night's UFC 154. Mike, it was the return of George St. Pierre. And I believe you and I and several others in the official picks picked George St. Pierre. I believe the only people that picked Condit was it Todd Martin and Oliver? I can't remember. But the point is, I know you picked George St. Pierre. Were you surprised at any aspect of his return performance last night against Carlos Condit?
No, not really surprised at all. You know, obviously, I think he's probably going to take off a little bit of muscle on his legs and everything. I mean, he looked really good, but, you know, you could obviously tell, you know, some guys when they come back, they're, you know, they're training, you know, that part of the body, and obviously he needed to get his knee strong again. And I bet you he comes in a little bit trimmer looking with a little bit less muscle the next time around. But really, realistically, outside of getting caught with that head kick, which, you know, again, he hadn't been hit like that since Sarah and put down, and he ended up surviving that, basically, I thought, tying up that third round and then going on from there. I mean, a very textbook, very good performance for George St. Pierre. And again, you know, missing all that time, the 18 months or whatever it was. You know, obviously not good for in the grand scope of his career, losing such a prime time, but at least for his sake, he picked up exactly where he left off.
I wouldn't have changed my pick, but Todd Martin and I were going over picks on Thursday's show, and I'd been watching a lot of the videos that showed up online and on Fuel and such. A lot of the training footage of George St. Pierre, and obviously they weren't going to show all of his training footage. They weren't going to show a lot of the MMA aspect of the training footage, but they were going to show a lot of athletic training footage. And obviously they're going to show you the best stuff and everything like that, but just from watching a lot of the preview shows, it was like, okay, George is coming off an 18-month layoff. He's coming off a very serious injury. But watching the training footage, this dude looked like an MMA killing machine. And the footage they showed of Carlos Condit, he looked like a very, very good MMA fighter. And to me, there was a big difference between the two. I didn't see any evidence in any of the GSP footage that his knee was going to affect him in any way. He looked in shape. And perhaps most importantly, he looked really excited to come back and really relaxed and really happy. And this probably sounds worse than I'm intending it to, but sometimes George St. Pierre can be a total head case. Sometimes I think he lets things really get to him, and he's actually talked about it in the past as far as like the mental part of his game he's had problems with in the past. And he just looks so happy and so excited and so relaxed that my conclusion was, this dude is ready. He doesn't have a lingering knee issue. The knee isn't bothering him too bad. I think he's going to come back in here and be largely the same George St. Pierre. So I made the pick of St. Pierre. And again, like I said, I would not have changed my pick, but the day after I made that pick, I was reading an interview with his jiu-jitsu coach talking about his comeback. And apparently, George rehabbed for a long time. Obviously, he was out 18 months. He rehabbed for a long time. He did everything exactly as the doctor ordered. He did not want to rush back. He was very diligent in trying to get back to 100%. However, he was unable to get clearance to start a full training camp until 8 weeks ago. And the first 4 weeks of the training camp, it was said, were really hard for George. And there was a lot of stuff where he couldn't really move around a lot standing. So he had to do a lot of fighting from the bottom during this period. Now, again, he had an 8-week camp and the first 4 weeks were hard. The first 4 weeks of an 8-week camp, he was largely on his back on the bottom, so he didn't use his legs too much. When I heard that, I was like, So you're telling me that this dude didn't start doing full 100% MMA training until 4 weeks ago? 4 weeks ago, Mike! That was a little disconcerting to me. And, you know, then they're talking about how, the second 4 weeks he was great. He was the old George St. Pierre and this and that. And I'm like, this dude was really the old George St. Pierre after four weeks of a full 100% training camp? That was a little, worrisome. But hey, dude went in there, and granted, he got tired. But, as you noted, he got rocked in the third round, and he recovered. He protected himself. He got back up. He kept coming. And as tired as he was in that last round, he kept moving forward, and he kept dominating this guy. So, I was extremely impressed with George St. Pierre knowing all that information. And he is going to be probably a lot better next time. God forbid he gets hurt again. But for the time being, that's a tough, scary dude.
There's lots of people like to say that, Anderson Silva or John Jones is the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. And, it's hard to argue with that. And if Silva ever fought George St. Pierre, realistically, Silva's going to beat him. The physical difference between the two guys is a lot more than you would believe, especially if you've seen both of those guys, especially when they're not in, ring shape and you look at the size of them. Silva's just too big, and you'd have to diet Silva down to a level he wouldn't go to. I think to make it, at its most fair for George St. Pierre. With that said, there's a lot of people that, as John Jones and Anderson Silva have been getting all of this love as far as being the top fighter in the world, a lot of GSP people said, you're kind of forgetting about a guy in George St. Pierre where, if all things ended up being even, George St. Pierre, how can you say he wouldn't beat both of those guys if they were exactly the same size? You can't, and one thing they definitely say is you wouldn't be able to do it twice. So, what would that say? St. Pierre just, again, staked his claim, and Carlos Condit's a great fighter, and a lot of people, people weren't, nuts or trying to pull one out as far as an upset goes, as far as picking Carlos Condit. He deserved the number one contendership, and he is that good, and can arguably beat, the rest of the division. He has a loss against Campman, and, he did, wonders for himself along with the rest of that division, too, because I'd like to see St. Pierre again down the line. I'd like to see Condit and Johnny Hendricks. I'd like to see Condit and Rory McDonald, and Hendricks against all of those guys as well. So it was a really good night for the welterweight division. It's just the ironic part is, even though you have all of these great fights going on, it seems like the championship position is, very, very secure.
It was an interesting night. They had Anderson Silva there, and there was talk that he was going to go in the cage and challenge George St. Pierre to a fight if he won. Silva denied it. Of course, Silva denies everything, and it means nothing. It's all posturing. But he didn't get in the cage, and Joe Rogan tried to push St. Pierre to challenge Silva, and St. Pierre was not biting. He was like, well, gotta go home, I want to take a vacation, talk to my camp, do what's best for myself and the fans. Obviously, he's probably going to accept the fight, but he didn't last night, and last night would have been the perfect opportunity to do so. So maybe the fight won't happen, but what if it did? We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are talking UFC 154, the return of George St. Pierre. Last night, destroying Carlos Condit over 5 rounds, beat him up real bad. Best way to put it, coming off a 18-month layoff, and we've been talking the potential of a George St. Pierre-Anderson Silva fight. Last night at the show, as we noted in the last segment, George St. Pierre was asked about Anderson Silva. There's a lot of talk that Silva was going to get in the cage and challenge George afterwards. He didn't. He was there. He was applauding. He was marking out for the fight, but he didn't get in the ring for the challenge. And George didn't take the bait either. I think the fight's going to happen. And what was interesting about last night watching the fight is there were two things in the fight that were very interesting. One was when George St. Pierre got rocked with a kick to the head and was in deep trouble. He is susceptible to strikes, as everybody's well aware. That, of course, would be Anderson Silva's strength. The other aspect of the game that was interesting was how good, and granted, Carlos Condit isn't the best in the world at stopping takedowns, but George took this dude down at will. And once he took him down, his top game, the pressure of his top game, was ridiculous. He was so heavy on Carlos Condit. And Condit is very good off of his back. He never came close to submitting George St. Pierre. Every time he moved, George St. Pierre remained or moved into a safe position. He landed a lot of landed many strikes from the top. And the kind of fighter that can take down and control a guy on the ground is the kind of guy that can beat Anderson Silva. So George has all of the tools to beat Silva, and Silva has all of the tools to beat George St. Pierre. Very interesting fight. The obvious difference between the two guys is size. St. Pierre is a lot smaller walking around than Anderson Silva. Anderson's, even if they cut to 177, which is, I believe, the weight that they would fight at if they actually did this big fight, even if they fought at that weight, Anderson Silva is still going to be a lot bigger. And George would probably have to gain weight as well, which is going to affect his speed. He seemed to be a little heavier in this fight, and he seemed to be fine, but a heavier George St. Pierre takes away some of his strength. So it's a very interesting fight. UFC thinks they're going to put that fight together in the spring of 2013. And if Anderson Silva wins, which a lot of people are expecting to happen, they would do Anderson Silva versus John Jones at the end of 2013. So two gigantic shows in 2013. And Mike, I want to get your thoughts on all of that.
Well, that would be, that's the quote-unquote super fight that I would wait to do, was Anderson Silva and John Jones. And maybe if you want to do that one in Dallas, go ahead and try to do that one in Dallas at that point. I don't think they're ready to do Dallas at all, period. Much less being able to draw with Anderson Silva and GSP. And again, for the reasons you mentioned, I just, it's not a good fight for George St. Pierre, number one. Number two, it's not a good super fight to have, because in the position that they're in right now, it's not like they're, you know, blowing the doors off of Fox with ratings or anything like that. They're not at their peak, so why, you know, have one of those guys when you're not in the, at the optimum level you should be to really have a shiny super fight and maximize it for all it's worth, and spend all the costs that you would have going into it, and then having one of those guys lose? I don't think now's the time for it, especially because you have title fights, you know, with guys. Look, I'm not expecting Chris Weidman or Michael Bisping to beat Anderson Silva, but they are two fights that are, you know, available and out there for you to do. You know, that will, you know, that should end up doing pretty good. And the same thing with George St. Pierre. I mean, you have Johnny Hendricks. You have, you know, the possibility of Hendricks McDonald. You have, you know, again, if the new John Fitch is truly the new John Fitch and he goes through Maya in the same way he won his last fight, then you have a reason to do Fitch and GSP and get people into it, because this new John Fitch isn't going to be, you know, looked at as the old one. So when you have all of these possibilities to do pay-per-views and have pay-per-view main events, and you can have those guys, again, with wins continuing on their record and not knocking each other off, I think that's the smartest move for them to make right now, and then wait on doing Anderson Silva and John Jones, which I think will have much more impact, especially because it can be the all-Nike fight, for God's sakes.
I got to disagree. Anderson Silva is, he's 38, and dude has more money than he'll ever need, which actually is the story of the George St. Pierre fight, too, because I read an article in USA Today. This guy is making an estimated 8 figures a year off endorsements. A lot of these deals, by the way, were signed when he was hurt and not fighting. But still, when you're making 8 figures a year, so we're talking like, you know, over $10 million on endorsements, and you've got so much money that you never have to do this again. You have to get out of bed every day and find the motivation to go and get beat up by the best guys in the world, day after day after day after day. And he has that motivation. Now, granted, he's 31. Anderson Silva is 38, and he's in the same situation. He's got two fights left on his deal. I know that sometimes he says he's going to fight for another 5-10 years or whatever, but I don't think that's going to happen. And if a dude's got two fights left on his deal, then to me, what are the absolute two biggest, most lucrative fights that you can sign for this guy? To me, a fight with anybody other than George St. Pierre and John Jones as your final two fights, I think it's just a waste of an Anderson Silva fight at this point. I think that I would expect that he would beat George St. Pierre. I think that show would do a million buys. I know this is not very scientific, but I go to the chiropractor every other week, and all this guy can talk about ever is, when are George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva going to fight? He doesn't know anybody in the UFC nowadays. He's a guy that used to watch it when it was really hot in 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008. I think he kind of follows it now, but that's all he asks about. When are George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva going to fight? When are they going to fight each other? And this fight would do a million buys. If Silva won, he has got one more fight left on his deal. You put him against John Jones. John Jones is a young guy. He is the face of their light heavyweight division. He'd be a lot bigger. If he beat Anderson Silva in Silva's last fight, then Silva put a guy over on his way out, to use a pro wrestling reference. And if not, you want to know what? If Anderson Silva beats John Jones and George St. Pierre in his last fight, and he ends his career with a win defeating the guy in the division below him and above him in championship matches, some people are going to say, well, you know, that wouldn't be good for the sport. You just beat John Jones and GSP. You know what, though? This guy is already going to go down in history as the best fighter of all time. And if he went in his last two fights at age 38, beat GSP and John Jones in succession, nobody would ever touch this guy, ever, in terms of the greatest fighter of all time, ever, ever, ever in our lifetimes. And to me, it ain't a big deal for George St. Pierre and John Jones to lose to the guy that nobody is ever, ever, ever going to touch. Plus, you would have a generation of fans that would be able to say, man, I was there during the reign of the greatest of all time. It's not going to hurt those two guys to lose to this guy. And hey, one of them may beat the guy, and it's going to be a huge deal whoever beats Anderson Silva. I don't think you can go wrong with these two fights. And again, to me, putting Anderson Silva against anybody else in what is very likely going to be his final two fights of his career, I think it's just a complete waste.
You know, I can't disagree with you too much, except for I would still do him defending the title one last time. To me, I don't know what their schedule's like for the rest of the year, but to do Bisping at an arena in England would be absolutely ridiculous. You want to do an outdoor show, that would be a ridiculous one to do, and then turn around and have him fight John Jones. And I know what you're saying, it's not going to hurt George St. Pierre, but realistically, it takes time off of GSP with all these other good fights that still happen to be around at 170 pounds, including Nick Diaz floating out there, too, where I I'm colored with this, too. I just don't think George St. Pierre is going to beat Anderson Silva. You know, if they have a fight, even if he moves up, I just don't think he's going to do it within this year. I mean, 2 years from now, because, you know, Silva's that much older. Maybe. I just don't think it's a good matchup at all for George St. Pierre, so it's a fight I would rather not see. But I would like to see Anderson Silva and John Jones, so I would make that absolutely no matter what for his last fight, yes.
I've been mentioning a lot about Johnny Hendricks, but we should tell everybody what happened if they didn't see the show. He faced Martin Kampman, and I went back and forth on this pick several times. I was going to go with Hendricks, and I was going to go with Kampman. And I was going to go with Hendricks, and I was going to go with Kampman. And finally, I was like, Martin Kampman's going to win this fight. What an idiot. Johnny Hendricks destroyed this fool. Destroyed him. 46 seconds. He punched him right in the face. By the way, I didn't mention this last night on the Observer radio show, but what happened was he hit him with a right hand and then hit him with a left hand and knocked him out. Fell flat like a tree. And the best part of the entire pay-per-view was Joe Rogan is interviewing Johnny Hendricks about this. And Hendricks goes, "You're never going to believe this, but I just started working on that technique 2 weeks ago. It came to me in a dream." And I was like, a 1-2 combination came to you in a dream? You hit him with your right hand, and you followed it up with your left hand. This is a new technique that was handed down to you from the gods in a dream? I laughed so hard when he said that. But yeah, that's his new technique, a 1-2 punch.
Well, he is a wrestler, you know. So wrestlers and hands sometimes just don't go together. So maybe it took him that long to have that kind of epiphany. Danny Hodge came to the Ada, Oklahoma native in a dream and told him, throw the right, then the left.
We'll be back in just a moment, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. If none of these are working for you, tune in radio app on your smartphone. Tune in radio app. Search for Sports Byline USA. You can listen to all of the Sports Byline programming on your smartphone. Just plug that Delia Bob into your car or use the Bluetooth feature in your car, and you can listen to all of your favorite Sports Byline programming, including Wrestling Observer Live, and not only the live show every Sunday, but you can listen to archives as well. So check out the TuneIn Radio app. I'm not making any money for this, by the way, this plug of the TuneIn Radio app. I should be, I think, but I'm not. I just want you to be able to hear the show. So check that out. I want to welcome KRAK 910 AM, Hesperia, California, Riverside, and the Inland Empire. Very big thank you to Harvey Wells. If you are a station manager listening to this programming on the internet or elsewhere and would like your station to carry Wrestling Observer Live, email me, Brian@WrestlingObserver.com. That's B-R-Y-A-N at WrestlingObserver, all one word, .com. And I'll put you in touch with the important people at Sports Byline. Or you can contact me at Brian Alvarez on Twitter. Mike, of course, at Sempervivi. Check out WrestlingObserver.com for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, plus more radio shows than you'd ever know what to do with. Thousands of hours of audio in the archives. Become a member for $10.99 a month. Get full access to everything, plus brand new radio shows every single day. We have a new radio show coming up later on tonight, talking the Survivor Series, myself and Dave Meltzer. Dave and I were up last night as well, covering UFC 154. We'll be back tomorrow covering Raw and all of the news in pro wrestling and MMA, as we are doing here today. Mike and I talking UFC 154 and the Martin Kampman fight and the amazing epiphany by Johnny Hendricks that you should throw a 1-2 combination to knock a dude out. This guy's talented.
Very, very. I've been on the Hendricks train for quite some time. I actually picked him in the fight against John Fitch. I picked him against Koscheck. And obviously, you know, the Fitch fight, I guess maybe he had the epiphany then, too. He just didn't know it. Maybe the spirit had entered his body, but just to his hand, and he's been wondering this whole time how his knockout in 12 seconds against John Fitch happened, and maybe that was the problem with his performance against Josh Koscheck, which he won by split decision, is, you know, the spirit was still inside him, but it was confusing him, and he didn't know what was going on. But then finally, just mere days before his match with Martin Kampman, the spirit came out of him and told him, throw a right cross, you know, up to deflect attention, and then follow that thing with a straight left that would go directly onto Martin Kampman's chin and knock him out in highlight reel fashion. Thank God the spirits told him to do that, because it obviously won knockout of the night, and again, is one of those highlight reel type of knockouts we're going to be seeing for a long time.
Who did you think won Francis Carmona against Tom Lawler?
You know, I picked Carmona before the fight, actually. I thought he was going to win, even though I hated going against Tom Lawler. I always pick against Tom Lawler, even though he does the greatest weigh-in sequences and has the best ring introductions. This time at the weigh-ins being the Shockmaster, no, literally, the Shockmaster, Fred Ottman from WCW. Yes, he redid that during the warm-ups, but I picked against him, and with that said, I thought he won the fight. In fact, I thought he won the fight 3-0, actually. I guess I shouldn't be too stunned in the fact that he didn't win them, you know, super outright or anything like that. And Karmov did throw a lot of punches, you know, in relation to what he was throwing in the first round. It was just that when he landed, frankly, he didn't do the type of damage that I thought he had ended up getting credit for by the judges giving him that first round. I mean, Lawler put him up against the cage. He dragged him down. Karmov at one point was looking for a Kimura, but Lawler shook it off and eventually almost got a guillotine. And again, I just thought he did more. And again, not that he wasn't completely, you know, gassed a little bit by the time the round ended, but realistically, I thought he controlled enough of them to win all three rounds. And again, just a little bit surprised with the way the two judges had it, 29-28 for Karmov.
Rafael Dos Anjos looked great.
Yes, he did, and I don't, you know, that was, again, not a great night for Mark Bocek. You know, Dos Anjos controlled the whole fight. I mean, the whole thing was kind of told in the first round where Bocek kept trying to go for the takedown. I think it was at least five or six times, and Dos Anjos, you know, just stuffed him every time. He used leg kicks and good punching to stifle Bocek's game. And ended up sweeping at 30-27 on all three judges' scorecards.
Any other highlights from the show you'd like to discuss?
I guess really the only one was the FX main event, probably being of note, where Patrick Cote and Alessio Sicara, which I don't know what you were thinking about this. I was actually sending out about a tweet about it where, and then they announced the decision, and I kind of got swerved. It looked as though Sicara was going to win the fight, even though he landed about nine punches to the back of Cote's head after staggering him up against the cage with elbows. You know, the Dan Margiotta finally jumped in. He pushed Sicara off, and it looked like, well, okay, they're going to come back, and he's actually going to get the win. But then they announced that Cote won the fight via disqualification, which... Also, while it's, you know, a little bit more fair in the fact that Sicara was using illegal blows and may have knocked Cote out, the fact of the matter is Sicara wasn't warned, and it just was flat out at the end of the day, even though it wouldn't have been as unfair of a decision if Sicara had won, it's still a bad decision and bad refereeing from Dan Mergulhiato last night.
Yeah, I didn't... I guess he wasn't warned. I actually didn't know he wasn't warned. I presumed... I guess what happened was it happened, and they watched the replay, and then the decision was made for the deal. But the thing to me was, like... It wasn't like I watched the replay and went, oh, my God, he hit him in the back of the head a bunch of times. It was like I was watching it live, going, that's the back of the head. Back of the head. Ref, that's the back of the head! And there were, like, I think we went back on the replay to count how many actually hit the back of the head. And I think we concluded that about six actually hit the back of the head. But there were about 11 shots that could have hit the back of the head. Some hit, like, the trapezius. Some did end up on the side of the head. But he was just punching this guy in the back of the head repeatedly. It was not a situation where the guy was moving around a lot and shots were accidentally landing in the back of the head. No. Dude is face down and the guy is raining down shots in the back of the head. My thought is, do you really need a warning? You know, do you really need a warning that, hey, you're hitting the guy in the back of the head? I've seen fights where, yeah, everything's out of control. Hand goes here in the wrong spot. You need to warn the guy. But no, this was a guy's turtled up, and you are raining down shots in the back of the head. The referee was Mergliotta here. This was some of the absolute worst refereeing I've ever seen in my entire life. With that said, you didn't need a bad referee to know you're hitting a guy repeatedly in the back of the head. So, I was completely fine with the disqualification. What are you doing? Like, as a fighter, what are you thinking? I can just hit the guy in the back of the head until I get warned? Oh, I didn't know it was the back of his head. You're aiming, and you hit him repeatedly in the back of the head. That's a DQ. You're an idiot.
But you're trying to hit him on the side of the head, and you're raining down those punches. And
but he wasn't trying to hit him on the side of the head. The dude was unmoving.
I know what you're saying.
He was hitting him right in the back of the head.
It's also the referee's job to jump in there and do something about that. And yes, you're exactly right. If it was a battle of stupidity, obviously Sakara lost. And look, you will not get a person, you know, less enthusiastic about Sakara than me. I'm still, you know, angry over that Thales Leites fight he had in Philadelphia a couple years ago. I still have not gotten over that at UFC 101. Yes, it was stupid, but with that said, you know, these were legitimate blows that led to that setup, and, you know, it should have been, you know, you stop, you say, hey, you know, go over there, if you do it again, you're done, but it's not like Mergulliano was warning him or even saying anything the whole time. I mean, what was he saying? It didn't seem like anything, and then all of a sudden, it looks to be a stoppage. It was just poor all the way around. But yes, as far as stupidity goes, you're absolutely right. I mean, Sakara completely blew it there and, you know, basically handed him over an easy win.
I have absolutely no problem blaming Mergliata for 90% of this, but it's still, you shouldn't need a warning in a situation like this. Like, you're aiming for the back of his head like a complete idiot. So, DQ, I felt, was perfectly justified, as would be Dan Mergliata needing to go to getting hit in the back of the head school or something. I don't know what it would be for referees, but that whole thing was appalling. Speaking of heads, this is actually having nothing to do with UFC, but last night there was the Extreme Rising Eye pay-per-view. I didn't see it, but Matt Hardy was working the main event, and he was knocked off the top rope, and he hit his head on the ground, and apparently went into convulsions and vomited on himself and was in a very bad state. And they got everybody out of the building. It took a long time to get Matt Hardy up. He eventually walked to the back on his own. But I know that last night I had people emailing me. I know that Dave wrote the same thing on the website, that based on the individuals running this show and some of the angles that they have done in the past, people wouldn't have been surprised if this was a work. I could tell you from talking to some people who were at the show last night, some of the people who were there the entire evening, not fans, I'll just say that, 99% sure this was legitimate. So protect your head, everybody. You got to be careful. And best wishes to Matt Hardy. Hopefully he does whatever he has to do to take care of this concussion. Do not get in the ring. And as was noted with Cody Rhodes, the best thing that happened to him was they took care of him, and now he's got to take some time off because head injuries can, in fact, end your career forever. So anyway, that is the update on Matt Hardy there. I presume you did not see that eye pay-per-view, Mike.
I did not see that.
No. All right, tomorrow is Raw, and I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I guess it'll all depend on what happens here tonight. But
you know what won't happen on there tomorrow? Ivan Menjivar won't go out there and take someone's arm home like he took Azamat Gashimov's arm last night.
Mike is still
that just because it was awesome.
Fixated on this UFC show. It was a great show, wasn't it?
Well, I had to point that out because that was one of the coolest things on there, and it happened. They showed it at least on the FX portion of the proceedings, that arm bar, that, man, when they showed it from the side, the way he had it wrenched up, I mean, that's one you dream about, except being trapped in it, because I don't know if there was any super damage to it, but I'm sure Gashimov's arm is hurting today.
Yeah, Menjivar spun for an arm bar, and
I can't believe you said Gashimov. I sound like Goldberg last night.
Yes, and Gashimov
tried
to one-arm deadlift him and slam him onto his head. But as he's lifting him up, Menjivar did like a, I don't know how to explain it, but he just totally splayed out belly first and took this dude's arm home. It was awesome. I got to say, that was awesome. All right, we're going to head to a break. When we return, we shall wrap this program up. Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Ryan Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Final segment here on our two-hour show every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And my man Mike, Hulk Hogan, struck down by the court in his lawsuit against Gawker.com. They don't have to take down the one-minute video clip of his sex tape. It's news, they said. It's already out there. People just put it up somewhere else. What do you think about this this setback in the Hulkster's journey for redemption?
Hey, look, I don't mind people doing exhibitionist things for my own viewing pleasure or just to do them. But
stop.
It's gotta be.
Hold on a second.
What?
You're viewing pleasure, the Hulk Hogan sex tape?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, all these quote unquote leaked sex tapes go out there and people benefit from them and Steve Hurst buys them and people go, oh, I hate this. But then you find out later on they're probably the ones who put them out there. I don't mind that. I don't care about that. Fine. Do your thing. With that said, the problem with this is, Hulk Hogan didn't know. And again, I'm going off that assumption because, you know, it seems to be that, no, he's actually got kind of screwed in this whole deal, even though he did the screwing on the tape.
I'll say.
But you know, unfortunately, you know, I don't want to say he's getting the short end of the stick here, but it certainly...
She's not.
It certainly sounds like that he is, but yeah, like why this is news, too, I mean, that's another problem. Is this really news? Of course it's not. Again, it's from a point of view that way, as far as privacy issues goes, I think there's a real problem there.
I do got to say I feel really bad for Hulk Hogan, despite all the jokes.
He's getting it in the end.
He did not ask for this, and it's out there now forever. So that just sucks. That just sucks. Someday some one of his kids is going to be Googling his name. And, oh, my God. That's it, everybody. We got to go.
Need a stiff drink.
We got to go. Back later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com. So check it out. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network.